I'm going to turn around then and close my eyes.
So here is instrument number one. And I'll grab instrument number two.
Well, I can definitely hear a difference. I think the second one was a bit richer for me. I think I prefer probably the second sound.
That's very interesting. Well, now I will tell you that instrument number two is the Strad.
Oh, I'm obviously... I'm brilliant, obviously.
Obviously. And I think that it's very interesting. People often think, oh, I couldn't possibly tell the difference between two instruments. But played side by side, I think it's very easy to hear the difference between two instruments. One, as you say, has a richer sonority. And the other one perhaps has a more focused sound.
What were the two instruments you just played me then?
I've just played you a Stradivarius made in 1708 and a Giovanni Battista Guadagnini made in 1757. So, you know, these instruments were approximately 50 years apart. I think one of the reasons why people love to play Stradivarius' instruments is because, first of all, they project beautifully. They are so even to play, so you don't have one string that sticks out more than another. If you take literally from the bottom to the top, it is one even sound, and I'll just demonstrate that.
Stradivari are idealised by many as the ultimate violins. They may be roughly 300 years old, but there is no sign of their power diminishing, with the best selling for millions of pounds at auction. Over the centuries, the secret of the golden sound has been attributed to various magical properties, such as the wood, the varnish, and the strings. But now science is being used to unlock the key to the Strad's success. Colin Goff, Emeritus Professor of Physics at the University of Birmingham.
The mystique of the secret came up in the middle of the 19th century, and we've been searching for it ever since. And, I mean, the search is still there. It's certainly true that the very greatest makers still believe in the superiority of the Stradivari instruments. So there is something there that we'd like to get our hands on and really understand, and the hope is that scientists might, in fact, be able to help them.
So is it like a quest for the Holy Grail?
So a quest for the Holy Grail.
What we're really aiming for as performers when we play is to bring something of the character of the music through your own expressive and creative powers and with the help of a wonderful instrument.
Do you think this feeling and connection you have with the violin is something that science could possibly explain, or do you think it's beyond science?
I actually feel it's beyond science.
So can science master the Strad? Or is the emotional pull of an instrument's sound beyond rational analysis? Colin Goff may be a physicist, but when I walked into his study, I found myself surrounded by violins.
How the violin works is that the bow is made of horsehair. It sits on the string, and you pull it sideways, and if you put it sideways like this, you can hear it pulling across and then releasing itself when the tension in the string can't be held anymore. But what actually happens when you play a violin properly, that is happening at a very fast rate indeed. So if I play this note, we are all brought up to think about waves on strings. Well, the string doesn't actually vibrate like that at all when you bow it, because it has this kink that runs up and down. It's more like a tsunami running up and down the string. And it gives rise not only to frequencies present in the note, that at the pitch of the note, which is, I play the open G string, let's call it 200 hertz, there's a component of the sound that's at double the frequency, three times the frequency, four times the frequency, five times the frequency, six times the frequency, seven, and then eight times the frequency. All those frequencies are present in the note that you hear.
We've got in front of us a couple of violins, and you're holding this rather strange sort of cross affair with a ball on it. Tell us how this is used to test violins.
Basically, when the string vibrates, it continuously taps the violin. So if we want to know what the violin does, the simplest way is actually to tap the violin with a small hammer. And we can listen to the sound of the violin as I tap it with a small hammer.
So you're actually hitting there the bridge, the bit the strings rest on.
Because that's where the strings rest on. Every time you bow the string, a little pulse, we call it a kink, runs round the string. And every time it hits the bridge, it does just the same thing as my little pith ball hitting it. So it happens at 200 times a second, roughly, when you play the open G string. And when you play the open E string, it's a much higher frequency. That just little pulse tells you what it does at every single frequency. It's a very quick measurement, and many violin makers now use it as a way of testing their instruments.
Well, I've come to a bit of Manchester, and I'm in the workshop of George Stepania, a violin maker, and I think it's a real archetypal picture of a workshop. There's dusty violins everywhere, stacks of wood, jam jars with who knows what chemicals inside it. And in front of me, I've got what looked like a set of, planks of wood, really. Are these potential violins?
Indeed. If I tap this one, you can hear it ring.
So that's a good ring, because it rang for a long time. Is that what you're listening for?
That's one thing that I might listen for. Another thing I'm listening for is the pitch. Here I've got another piece of quite reasonable wood. It's a much lower pitch. But then it's thinner. If I picked this up and it just stopped dead, I would not want it. I would think there was something wrong with it.
Sorry to be ignorant here, but it looks like a bit of wood I could have bought down B&Q.
Well, if you do find it at B&Q, let me know.
You won't find the right grade of spruce or maple at your local DIY shop. Violin makers are inveterate tappers, whether they're assessing the ringing sound by ear or using sophisticated computer analysis of microphone recordings. Many are now embracing scientific methods as a way of gauging the quality of the wood. Makers such as Terry Bowman.
Being able to know what the density of the wood is and the density distributions of the wood, which is what my research has gone into, it makes a huge difference in that at the very beginning of the process, a maker can decide which piece of wood to use and have a pretty good idea that that piece of wood, at the very least, is not going to short-circuit the process. It's going to be a piece of wood that will function as well as possible. As a maker, there are so many things that can go wrong during the process that knowing that one particular aspect is locked in and solid is a huge benefit to a maker. Even wood from the same tree could have very different characteristics. It's really just fabulous that modern science can help the modern maker this much.
One of the things that's completely transformed research on the violins is the way that we can now use even the simplest laptop computer to analyse the sounds of the instrument. An example of this is using a magic little bit of electronics, which is called Signal Wizard. It's a box that allows us to take the sound of the vibrating string by itself. You can measure the tap sound of a great instrument like a Stradivarius or Guarnerius instrument. You can feed that information into the little box from the computer, and then what comes out of the output that goes into the loudspeaker is the sound that would have been made had you been actually playing the real instrument. That is the resynthesized sound of what a Strad might be.
So I could have a Stradivarius in my bedroom without spending millions.
Absolutely.
Top violins from Cremona, Italy, including Strads, have reputedly sold for close to $4 million. So there's lots of money at stake as science attempts to master the Stradivarius. Another line of inquiry is whether the wood preservatives used in Cremona affect the sound quality. This has been the life's work of Joseph Nagiavari, a violin maker and retired chemist.
The wood of the violins in Cremona suffered very little or no woodworm damage, while the ones in Milan and in Parma, the wood looked like Swiss cheese. I assumed already then that they used some sort of preservatives. And indeed, there are historical records to show that all the logs came down on rivers to Venice, where they were treated with chemicals to preserve them against the woodworm. Stradivari had that wood, and he probably did not do the chemical treatments himself. So in this regard, he was a lucky beneficiary of a wood preservation technology. In Stradivari's wood, indeed, we find sodium chloride, sea salt, in the wood, in addition to borax, which was a well-known insecticide. In the wood of Guarneri del Gesù, we have no sea salt.
When we're listening then to a Stradivarius today, we're still hearing the effect of that treatment of the wood then back in Venice.
Definitely the best violins which are played by, you know, Itzhak Perlman, Yehudi Menuhin, or nowadays by Joshua Bell, the certain combination of sonority and that high frequency sheen that goes with every note is coming from the chemicals, from the materials.
Even if you have the best piece of wood in the world, treated with the ultimate chemicals, it still needs to be expertly shaped to form the plates which make up the front and back of the violin body. Colin Goff.
A physicist looking at the way the violin worked would certainly say the whole of the secret of a violin sound has to reside in the way the loudspeaker works, because that's essentially what it is, how the plates vibrate and make the sound. You can demonstrate that very easily with an electric violin, because if I play an electric violin, an electric violin has no plates to radiate. And then I compare that, now a proper violin. So you can see much, much more sound is coming from the violin, because the plates are radiating.
So the actual whole body of the violin vibrates.
The sound that you hear of a violin is not the sound of the vibrating string, or only indirectly so. It's actually the sound of the vibrating plates. And the secret of all violins is in the way the plates go together and they vibrate.
But we face a problem when trying to examine existing violins. Dissecting priceless antiques to uncover how a violin was made is not for the faint-hearted. However, Terry Bowman's research into medical CT scanning gives him X-ray vision, revealing unprecedented details of the violin's wood and construction.
One of the advantages of CT scanning is that it allows a huge amount of information to be acquired without being invasive in any way. Normally, for example, to have gotten the density of a violin top prior to CT, the only way to do that was to take the top off the instrument, which is a dangerous job. The top would have had to have been encased in some sort of plastic bag, immersed in water. Then we could have measured the amount of displacement in the water. If the bag leaks, that's something that nobody wants to think about. With CT, it can be done, 100% safely, and the instrument comes out of the instrument case. It's placed on some very soft foam. It goes through the CT scanner. The whole process takes a minute, maybe. And in that amount of time, as makers, we've acquired information that would normally have taken hours or days to acquire.
For many years, it was thought that the varnish used back in the 17th and 18th century was the key to a Strad sound. Joseph Nagyavari.
None of the violin makers in Cremona made their own varnishes. They were made by the drugstore, and even Stradivari went there personally, carrying his own bottle, to make sure that he gets from the top of the varnish barrel and not from the bottom. He obtained a varnish which had the finest particles in it. The large and heavy particles settle on the bottom. Stradivari did not want to have a varnish which had large particles. And indeed, the Stradivari varnish has a lot of particles of nanometer size.
And over the years, you've tested lots of different kinds of varnish. I mean, how have you got hold of the samples of varnish of very expensive violins?
Well, you know, this is the tough part. I understand why owners of the great violins don't let me even near their instruments, because cutting out a piece of a $3 million Strad is obviously something no one wants to endure. But I was allowed personally only on one instance to sink in my hypodermic syringe into an original Stradivari instrument and get a core sample all the way to the wood for analysis. I had very, very tiny chips of other violins.
And when you got this varnish from various instruments, how do you actually go about analysing it?
We were first to apply modern means of microanalysis in 1978, and we have identified 22 different minerals in the Cremona varnishes.
Over the centuries, Strads have changed, not least because the best are regularly tweaked by skilled craftsmen to optimise the sound. This might be one reason why the Cremona violins in use today are of such high quality, because they have been continuously refined. But more than this, back in Stradivari's time, these instruments would have sounded quite different. Upstairs in his study, Colin Goff reached first for a modern-sounding violin. OK, that sounds like a violin to me, right, uneducated ear.
And this is a Brock violin, a modern copy of a Brock violin, but with gut strings. And under my ear as a player, that sounds extremely different.
But if I was to pick up a Stradivarius today, I hope I wouldn't because I might drop it, but if I was to pick one up today, I mean, would there still be existing, the old varnish still be on that?
There are traces of the original varnish. The varnish for a long time was thought to be the great secret, and there's certainly some makers that still believe that the varnish is all important. But the varnishes will actually have a small effect on the sound.
Presumably the wood of these classic Stradivarius violins must have changed over time.
Yes, they almost certainly have.
So looking for this magic effect of varnish sounds a bit of a false search.
Very few people are going down that track at the moment, but that's not to believe that some violin makers feel quite passionately about the varnish as being important.
If the varnish breaks up in tiny little fragments, these fragments serve as noise filter and thus make the sound much purer.
How would I hear that when I'm listening to the violin?
Well, if you pick up a brand new violin, especially if the violin was made from a naturally aged wood, you hear an enormous degree of generalized sound which appears to be a sort of sibilant, hissing sound.
What actually happened in the 19th century, violin dealers and makers of the time decided that they would actually improve the old instruments by making a longer neck, using higher tension strings. And one can listen to the sound of what it might have sounded like in Brock periods, because there are lots of very distinguished virtuosi playing the Brock violin. You can hear them on CDs, people like Andrew Manzi, and it's a different sort of mindset of listening to it.
Point in the course of history, wood was actually removed from inside Stradivarius's violins in order to make them resonate louder and therefore carry further, because presumably as concert halls became bigger and bigger, the need for projection became an issue.
Hopefully you noticed the change in the violin sound. The Baroque ensemble that was playing before Tasman Little spoke morphed to modern instruments by the time she had finished. One way scientists can analyse a violin is to look at how loudness varies with pitch. They examined graphs which revealed the violin's DNA, showing peaks which characterise an instrument. But how useful is this graph? Colin Goff.
Every violin has a very characteristic signature. It's like a DNA of an individual instrument. But the interesting thing is that the DNA spectrum, we call it, of the violin can differ very markedly from one violin to another, yet the sound still sounds rather similar. You don't get gigantic changes in the sound of an instrument. So there's something beyond the actual peaks themselves that must be important in determining what the quality of an instrument is.
And do you mean something physical, a signal I can measure on a microphone, or do you think something actually going on in our brain?
Well, it's almost certainly something going on in one's brain.
To define the quality of a violin, scientists need to unravel what goes on in the listener's brain. But carrying out tests to reveal why one violin sounds better than another isn't easy. Brian Moore, Professor of Auditory Perception at the University of Cambridge.
Even if people are unconscious of it, they have biases. They're influenced by their beliefs about things. And unconsciously, they'll give greater value to some things than to others. One example of this is that if you can give people two hearing aids to compare, and one will be labelled analogue and one will be labelled digital, the two hearing aids may in fact be absolutely identical, but the person will say, oh, the one that's labelled digital sounds better, just because it has that label, and they think that digital is newer, more technically advanced, and so on. Now, of course, in the case of violins, it's exactly the opposite way around. People have this idea that there's some mystery about the older violins. There's something that makes them sound better. Maybe there's some secret that the makers in Cremona had that's now been lost. It's often easy for a person to recognise that a violin is an old one, and that potentially means that it's a good and valuable and highly esteemed one.
And things get even more complicated when players get involved. Tasman Little.
One can pick up an instrument and instinctively know how to play it, or instinctively know whether you will be able to draw the sound out of the instrument that you would really love.
I was here when you were getting the instruments out, first of all, and when you got the first one out, you talked to it, you said, are you going to behave yourself today or something like that? I can't remember what it was. It wasn't quite that.
I think I said, don't sulk.
Don't sulk, that was it. You actually have a relationship with these instruments then?
Yes, of course, because you work so intimately with a violin, and I believe it almost sulks if I haven't played it for a while.
If we were to blindfold you and get you to play these two instruments, would you be able to tell the difference immediately?
From the very, very first moment that I put the bow on the string, I would be able to tell you immediately which of them was which. However, I'm not sure that if you were to place an instrument that I didn't know well into my hand and say to me, well, what is this? I can't say that I would be able to say this is a Stradivarius or this is not a great instrument. What I probably would be able to do would be to tell you whether this was an old instrument of very fine quality.
And they may tell this just from the feel of the varnish or the smell of the varnish. And this can have a huge influence. So you really can't get unbiased judgments because people are really good at picking up on just very subtle things. And they may not even be aware that they've picked up on these things, but just a slight difference in the feeling, the roughness of the varnish on the back of the neck, or exactly how high the strings are and how hard you have to press to make contact with the fingerboard and so on. All of these things can make a difference.
Is it feasible for science to really master the Stradivarius, or are we wasting our time given all the little details and psychology involved?
Well, it may be that the actual question of deciding what makes a great violin is still elusive and may never be answered.
This might sound rather fanciful, but I do believe that violins have got their own very distinctive character. And I quite like to liken this Stradivarius to a fine racehorse. It's quite temperamental. For instance, I can play very, very loudly and I can make quite a hard sound, if you like. Or I can also play extremely softly and make a sound that almost can be a whisper. And sometimes it takes me by surprise.
Part of choosing an instrument, then, is that about getting a good match between the spirit and the violin and you, your own personality?
I think it is, absolutely.
Now, the difficulty for a physicist or an acoustician is to work out what you actually mean by a spirit in the violin. And that really is the great difficulty at the moment, is getting that contact between the perception of the sound of the violin and what really makes a really great violin, and what the physical attributes are that contribute to that sound. Because often the player is convinced that playing an instrument well and playing it in tune improves the quality of the instrument. Unfortunately, as far as the scientist is concerned, there's absolutely no evidence at all.
Although the greatest Cremona violins are even today at the pinnacle, many leading soloists perform on modern instruments. Science hasn't mastered every aspect of the Strad. However, it's enabling new violins to rival them. Nowadays, science is playing a crucial role, allowing makers to learn from the great craftsmen of the past. Terry Bowman.
We're now at a time when we're understanding what the earlier makers were doing, and we're actually beginning in some ways to exceed that.
Do you think we had a secret we lost, or do you think that's a bit of a fallacy?
That's a lot of a fallacy. It's a romanticized view that has been perpetrated for a long time. So we could say that we're in a current golden era of instrument making that we haven't seen for 300 years.
The last word should go to a violin. But is it a Strad?
I'll play a little piece by Telemann.